Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Studio team.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team. And today we have a very special guest.
Andrei Breslav, project lead for Kotlin. Hello, everyone.
Right. Welcome. Kotlin, I feel like we've talked about that once or twice before on this podcast.
We mentioned it a few times.
Yeah.
I think you like it, Tor, right?
Yeah. So what is it? It's an island near St. Petersburg. Is that right?
Yeah, it's actually true. It's an island near St. Petersburg.
All right, so what's new with Kotlin these days?
I mean the island. I haven't been there for quite a while.
I mean the language.
Oh, what's new? We are working on a lot of stuff. Good news is that we are not adding another 10 features into the language in the next release.
Is that good?
It is.
I like features.
Yeah, we got quite a bit of feedback, like, guys, slow down there.
I like this a lot.
Yeah, we need to catch up with your language before you add new things. So yeah, we are doing something more of a stabilization, infrastructure, so on and so forth. So it's fewer things in the language, a lot of new things in the ecosystem. So the focus of the nearest release, one focus, is we're unifying all the backend infrastructure. So we'll have a common representation and mostly a common implementation for all the target platforms we have. So
just to be clear, when you say backend, you don't mean backend like most developers know.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
Compiler backend?
I'm wearing my compiler hat at the moment. And there, the backend is what takes your program and turns it into running code. Yeah, so Kotlin traditionally, historically, has three main backends. It's the JVM one, the JavaScript one, and the native one, which is actually targeting many, many native platforms. So all these will be unified. So we'll have common code across all those backends, which reduces the load on our team a lot and also enables great things for the users of the language, because if we have a common artifact for all platforms, you can apply common transformations, like what you can currently do for Java bytecode, for example, instrumentation or analysis or anything, will be possible on all Kotlin code out there.
So that's what you call the IR backend, right?
Right, yeah. And so IR stands for internal representation. This is just an abbreviation for what people use to represent your program before it gets becomes runnable bytes.
So today, so before all of this work you're doing, right, I have my Kotlin code. And a compiler runs the front end, and it generates something. And I assume that's IR. And now you have a new IR backend. But I'm assuming that the output of that, is that going to be a new IR format? Or because I have to assume that at the end, when you're generating, for example, you know, class files for the JVM, or if you're generating, you know, native code for iOS, like one of those is going to be LLVM, I assume. And you're not going to use that to spit out JavaScript. So like, I have to assume there's still going to be separate backends at the end.
Correct. Yeah. So actually, the common part across all the backends is what works on the Kotlin program. Like you need a lot of things, let's say, quote unquote, desugared in the language. We have lots of nice things that can be reduced to other things, but get more verbose. And this is what the common part of the backend does. And then platform-specific transformations kick in. For example, we translate our IR into Java bytecode, or we translate it to JavaScript source or to LLVM code that will later be generated as a binary.
I see. So the idea is you do more analysis on that intermediate stage before you hand it off to the code generators.
And the Java bytecode and the LLVM bytecode are IRs themselves.
That's true, yeah. Well, the Java bytecode is, like, by nature is an IR, although it's actually a runnable code. But anyway, yeah, so we do more analysis and, most importantly, transformations in the common part of the backend. So whenever we, say, turn lambdas into classes or whatever else, this is all happening in the common code. We don't have to do it again and again and differently for every backend.
And does this include any kind of optimizations that the compiler might be doing?
It might. So at the moment, I don't think we do many optimizations there. Although, yeah, we do a few. Like when we optimize for loops, for example, it's done in the common backend, yeah.
Are there any big advantages for users of Kotlin for this? Or is this more of a code sharing and architectural cleanup for you?
Well, for us, it's definitely code sharing is the biggest win. But then for the users, as I mentioned before, we can see that there is demand in program transformations that happen after the fact. Like when you have your code generated, you may want to instrument it somehow, to add things like logging or aspect-oriented things or whatever. There are many applications. Like you can see how widely used is the ASM library for Java. So we can have kind of the same ASM-like library for Kotlin on all platforms.
So this enables more metaprogramming-like things.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a non-invasive kind of metaprogramming, but when you don't mess with the compiler too much, you just do it on the outside, and it's much safer than just, say, macros in the language or something even worse than that.
And that also means you do it at a slightly higher level than, I mean, it's not assembly-like level, right?
Exactly,
so it's much easier to write these kind of transformations.
Yeah, so basically the IR we're talking about is not exactly the source code, but has all the structure of the source code. There is less variety, like all calls are the same, and in the source code, calls can look differently. But in the IR, they are all unified, and so on. But otherwise, it's the same program structure. You have functions, you have classes, you have, say, suspension calls, so on and so forth. It's all there in the IR.
Okay, so that's the new backends.
Just to plug our own projects, the Jetpack Compose library that we open source at Google.io relies on the new IR backend. The kind of transformations we do works at that level.
Right, yeah. This is an example of a very elaborate extension to the compiler. But yes, it relies on the IR infrastructure we have.
Okay, cool. So that's the new backend. What else are you working on? You mentioned...
One thing we didn't mention, what is the next major version of Kotlin? It's 1.4, right?
Right, it's 1.4. Yeah, so for 1.4, we're making more... changes and very interesting additions to our multi-platform story. So we're going to support what we call hierarchical multi-platform projects when you can have long dependency chains. It's pretty hard to explain without a picture, so I'm not going to try. But in any case, we already have pretty many multi-platform libraries, so most basic needs are already covered by the libraries available. There are a few white spots there. We'll cover them before the release. So the multi-platform story gets more and more mature. Also, in the coroutine space, we're doing pretty interesting things with something called Flow, which is the Kotlin implementation of reactive streams. And Flow is great in many respects. So,
yeah, many people seem really excited. I haven't had time to look at it myself in detail, but everybody seemed very excited by it.
Yeah, so I think this is a very nice addition to what we had in coroutines already. It does cover many things that RxJava, for example, covers in a much more complicated way.
You say a bit more about it? So it's reactive streams built on top of coroutines. Like, what kinds of operations does it support and enable?
I
don't mean in detail. It's like more the high level picture of Flow.
So basically, it's when you have a call source of something, like not an active generator of data, but just say a list of data, right? And you want to process it in a Rx like style. You can do this with Flow. And the interesting thing is that if you want your own operations, like you want to combine existing operators that you already have in the library, it's straightforward. Unlike, for example, RxJava, where it requires extensive knowledge of how it works. With coroutines, is just plain trivial. That's a big deal. Also, performance-wise, there are very interesting measurements that we've been doing. And on some benchmarks, we're already faster than existing solutions, including RxJava. So, and it's going to be even better over time.
And I understood you did something interesting with the tools there, right? You created some sort of API surface where if you have RxJava code today and you want to try Flow, you wipe out your import statements and replace them with like your own imports, I guess, that have the same class names. And then there's like a tool support for replacing the deprecations. Did I say that right? Well, I'm seeing two blank faces.
Unfortunately, I'm not sure about this. So this may be something that I haven't myself looked into yet.
So I got them. Sure. Like, so
I
one of the really nice things
talking about, there were big discussions on Twitter about that recently.
So one of the things I really, really like about the Kotlin tooling is that you have your own deprecation annotation. And as part of that annotation, you cannot just put a string, which, you know, the old deprecation annotation doesn't even let you put a string. You have to put a Java doc param as well, which is kind of sad. But so you have a description, but you can also put a quick fix. You can say, hey, replace this call with this other call, and it's smart about the parameter placement. So that means that in the past, I guess when you made incompatible changes to the runtime or the language, you would also deprecate the old one, and the tooling would have, you know, alt-enter quick fixing. So that's the backstory on this. And I gathered from a lot of drama on Twitter that the way they had made it easy to change the new API was to piggyback on top of this. So they'd created, let's say, the Rx Java API and added deprecation annotations that sort of mutate the code into the flow APIs. But I think they didn't actually deprecate the Rx APIs. They put them in their own package names, right? So it's not going to suddenly have IntelliJ light up your Rx code as deprecated. But if you were to go and change the imports, well, now the code could be transformed. Like, that's my impression of how this
happened. Oh, I haven't heard about this. I really need to catch up with the libraries team about this particular one. But the idea you describe is interesting. I like the approach. I guess I need to go back home and give some applause to someone because it's really cool.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. You can actually try this, I guess, fairly easily because there's tooling that mutates your code, which is nice.
You're always happy when there are tools.
Of course.
So yeah, you were mentioning coroutines and flow. Anything else coming in Kotlin 1.4 that people should be excited about?
Anything that rhymes with Ormonds?
Well, there is quite a bit of incremental work in terms of making things faster here and there. Like the change log there is pretty long.
Are you talking runtime performance or build speed performance?
Build speed is more of a focus at the moment, but also a little bit of runtime performance. So we are working on mostly on the tooling performance at the moment. So it's build speed with Gradle, better incremental compilation, also ID responsiveness and memory consumption, so on and so forth. There are continuous changes there that they're making things better and better.
Yeah, I noticed a big improvement recently. One performance thing that's bothered me for a while is that if I paste in some code where there's lots of unimported symbols and they're turning up in red, it used to sort of really take the editor down because I think it was trying to pick candidates for all the red symbols, not just one. And it was really slow. And the combination of latest Kotlin plugin and latest Kotlin seems to have sort of fixed this. So that's really helpful.
Yeah, we're trying to fix this kind of issues as soon as they're discovered. There is also a long-term effort that we are at now, which is a new front-end for the compiler. We spoke about the back-end already. The new front-end is a different kind of undertaking because currently there are limitations in how the compiler is written at the moment, so in the architecture of the front-end. So the way we read code, the way we type check it, the way we resolve names and everything can be drastically improved. And a while ago, we started a new version of this complicated set of algorithms, which is the Kotlin front-end. And so far, it's very promising performance-wise. So we hope to get a really, really fast compiler. It's not going to be very soon, so it's not going to be ready for 1.4. But this is something we're investing in.
Well, that doesn't sound scary at all. You're rewriting the back end and the front end of the compiler, and
at the same time,
right? And I assume the point is to not break any existing code.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the fun part. Like, and actually, one other thing that is coming in 1.4 is the rework of the type inference engine.
Yeah, that's already shipped. Bing now is because I feel like I'm using 1.3.40 or 50 EAP, and I feel like I've already seen this as an option.
Right. So currently, it's you can enable it with a compiler flag at the moment, and it is on by default in the IDE. So if you see any weirdly looking red code, it may be a bug in the type inference engine, but it only shows up in your IDE. So you can report an issue to us, but your build is not broken.
So what are the benefits of the new type inference engine for users, for people who just write Kotlin in their application?
Oh, yeah. There is one most important thing about the new inference. You can fix bugs in it.
That sounds like a great feature.
Yeah, it is. It is a very important feature because we had a number of bugs we just couldn't reasonably fix in the old implementation, so we had to redo it. That's one thing. And also it enables many interesting language features. I think, again, it's a little hard to explain type inference without a whiteboard, so I won't try. But
you can draw in DR for us.
I can draw with my one hand for Roman and with another hand for Tor, but no listeners will understand what I'm talking about. Well, in any case, it will enable language features like proper SAM conversions for Java interfaces, for example, and some other things. There are cool things coming. We'll probably give a good overview of this at KotlinConf.
I've been impressed sometimes how far ahead the type inference can look. You know, I have some really complicated super nested stuff, and it's basically it all resolves out. And I remember seeing a check-in from the IntelliJ team where they, a while back, went and added explicit types on a lot of their functions that, where I guess they hadn't specified the return type because an expression body?
Yeah, expression body.
So I guess when you were a client of that code, the compiler would have to go in and not just, it would have to actually do more work each time you were calling the function to figure out what is the body doing. And so I guess at the time when they did this, there was a big performance benefit for public APIs specifying the type explicitly. Is that still a best practice or is it not necessary anymore?
Well, there are different parts to it. So for one thing, for a public API, you definitely should specify your type explicitly.
Because, I was just to say that. Yeah.
So you don't leak through implementation.
Yeah, because for one thing, you can expose your implementation specific type. For another thing, if you change something in the implementation, the type can change. And if you don't know it, your binary compatibility with your clients is broken. So if you have a public API, definitely specify all the types. And I believe we even have inspections for this that are you can enable them in the IDE. So that's one thing. Another thing is performance. Like when inside the same project, you don't have the binary compatibility issue. It used to be really slow in some cases, especially in a large project. Now it's not as bad. So we bring it up here because it's also type inference, but there is some overloading to the term type inference. What I was talking about, the new type inference engine, is more about how we infer type arguments for generic calls. Like when we do anything, like from calling a map on a list, for example, there is a lot of generic type checking in the background, which you don't see. And this is actually good, which makes all the power of the type checking available to you without the need to spell out all the types in the code. So this is the actual hard part about type inference. This is where it's complicated. So this is what we are changing. The part about inferring types for bodies is not actually part of that new effort, although it definitely helps with correctness and maybe even sometimes performance. But yeah, the performance part is fixable through other means.
And so some of the performance improvements you were mentioning for the IDE come from the new type inference engine, right?
I'm not sure. Don't really think so. So okay. I think at the moment we are more after correctness in the new inference. So it will be even faster in the future, but so far it's not bringing much change in this respect. There was a big change for the IDE where we changed the way we interact with Java. So we basically, when we expose Kotlin code to the Java side of the world, all that Java can understand is Java classes. So we have to pretend somehow that we generate something like Java classes on the fly for the Java side of the IDE to resolve against. And this can be a heavyweight process, and it used to be, and now it's being replaced with a more lightweight. Actually, the old heavyweight process was named light classes, which is, it was really lighter than fully generating Java classes.
Please tell me you don't call the new one light 2.
They are called ultralight classes.
Okay. Of course.
Yeah, so we are working on this. I'm It's probably in master already, but I don't think it's released yet. It's going to be significantly faster than it used to be when you have Java in your project.
Yeah, I looked at the Kotlin compiler source code, and it seems like you have a lot of unit tests. It seems like it's it's pretty well covered. I think that helps Roman's concern slash worry.
I'm not concerned. Just to be clear, there's no spec for Kotlin, right? There's no language spec.
There is one in the works.
Okay. Because
there is no spec we can check all our implementation against yet.
So actually, here's
the spec is the compiler.
Here's an interesting question. Did you, like, in the process of writing that spec and, between writing the new front end, the new back end, did you run into bugs in the existing implementation of the language?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So many of them. Yeah. Well, actually, both specifying, adding new tests, and re-implementing stuff uncovers issues. And it can be either just plain bugs where we did stupid things, or inconsistencies. Like when you rewrite an implementation from scratch, you can find that, okay, this, it's not an incorrect behavior, but for some reason, some historical reason, we behave differently here and there while it should be the same. And this is always a design question, whether we want to preserve this behavior or change it to something. And if we change it, how we make it easy for the users to adopt the new version. So it's many discoveries and lots of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have been very busy lately.
Oh, yeah. And the maybe one of the most interesting challenges there is how you fix the compiler, a bug that's been there like forever, without breaking the users, because the least desirable thing for us is to block the work of people who are using Kotlin. And it's been working interestingly by now. So we've been doing this for like 3 years. It's been working fine. We don't get too many complaints. It looks like we can fix bugs and warn people up front so that they are not suddenly broken.
I mean, that's something that you've had a lot of issues with, right, Roman? Some of these early decisions in Android, then you have to live with them.
I mean,
although we have target SDK version, which we can sort of help, right?
Right.
So we can change the behavior. And, once you as a user of the platform opt into that new behavior, well, then you get that behavior.
But it's true of any sufficiently large platform, SDK, language, compiler. I mean, as soon as you start caring about compatibility, you're going to run into that kind of stuff. But it also what helps, I believe, make the success of those platforms. I mean, my favorite example is, Microsoft Windows, right? Like, you can still run applications from 30 years ago and they work like bugs and all. And I'm sure it must be hell for people who work at Microsoft, but, it's great for users. Actually, it leads me to another question. So right now you're preserving compatibility. You don't want to break the user's code bases, which is fantastic. Do you ever plan on changing that, let's say for Kotlin 2.0, like, would you like to break parts of the language, remove stuff, add stuff that's not compatible, or have you thought about that
There's
at all?
Two sides.
And related
to
thoughts.
It.
What do you think of Python 3?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's making a few breaking
we're
changes.
We're trying to start like a little, we're trying to start like a little thing here between language designers.
Okay, so I guess there are two sides to this. So on the one hand, I definitely want to remove some things that are proven to be good ideas. Or
please do tell.
Yes.
What would you
name names?
What do you regret?
Okay. Regret number one is implementing interfaces by delegation. The way it's done in Kotlin is wrong, is too limited, and can't be extended in a reasonable way.
Right. So that's when I write class foo by my interface.
Yeah. So just to clarify, there is no problem with delegating properties. There is only a problem with the delegating implementation of interfaces. So this is one thing I would really like to get rid of or redesign incompatibly, which is the same thing. Another thing is companion objects. Companion objects are nice in some ways and not nice in some other ways. I would like to keep the nice part. And
they are
the
they
nice
are
part.
The source of many, many questions online.
Absolutely, yeah. There is definitely, let's say, room for improvement there. And yeah, on the one hand, I would like to fix these things. And there are more. Like, for example, there is a problem with the way we do destructuring declarations, because it's index-based and some tools struggle with processing it quickly.
That also means that if you change the order of, you know, the arguments in the data class.
Yes. So it's also a problematic feature. So there are things I would like to fix. On the other hand, I don't want any users to be broken. So a good question is how we get from where we are to a cleaner language design without breaking the users out there. So with the experience of what we've tried over time, I think there can be a pretty smooth deprecation / conversion path for the users. We haven't tried it for anything big yet. So it will be at some point, it will be an experiment, but we definitely will backtrack and just cancel any changes if we see that it's breaking people's workflow.
Well, one of the benefits too is that you know JetBrains works on tools. So not that everybody uses IntelliJ to write Kotlin, but at least you will be able to offer...
You have good tools and it's a statically typed language. So you can reason about it in a way that other languages that we won't talk about...
Tell us what you think about a much harder time, right,
to try to migrate user code because you can't reason about dynamic code in the same way that you can reason about static type.
Right. So having a static type system and having tools at hand, we can do very nice things. Like we can do a pass over some code and say, okay, these things will go away in 2 years from now. So you'd better migrate from them. And here is the automated migration procedure that just rewrites your code without losing any meaning. This is what we intend to do. This is what we do routinely with smaller things.
So yeah, I mean, when you promoted coroutines from experimental to stable. I mean, that was a totally incompatible change. You moved code around.
At the last minute.
Yeah. Yet I think everyone's like, oh, I just applied Alt-Enter, thanks, fixed.
Yeah, well, I guess the difference with coroutines would be that those people who applied these quick fixes there were early adopters. So they were, for one thing, it was a smaller group of people. Also, they have a lot higher tolerance to all kinds of inconveniences.
Yeah.
So when we are changing things that are already stable, it will be like everybody in the community. So the bar there is much higher. So we have to make it really smooth. But we'll try. If it doesn't work, we can always say, okay, it didn't work. We're just not ruling out the new features. We just take back the deprecations. That's it.
So, you know, for fairness, since we made you name some of the things that you weren't excited about, what are some things that your recent things that are your favorite things about Kotlin?
Wow.
Or not so recent. Like, what is your favorite feature of the language?
I'm trying to get a journalistic scoop here because now he's been asked this question before. So if he just goes back to, you know, his normal answer, by limiting it to recent, you know, we'll get a fresh answer.
Yeah, okay. For one thing, coroutines are great. As I am so happy with the design we ended up with because I remember the initial version that we had many years ago. It was already much better than what other languages had at the moment. But when Roman Yelizarov joined and redid the entire vision for coroutines, basically, it was such a great improvement. So
we had a podcast about this, I think 2 episodes ago or something. And at the time, I had not really used it in anger. And since I have, and so now I'm a fan as well. So that was the push I needed, you know, the embarrassment of sitting here, having no clue what it was about. And actually being able to ask questions so I didn't have to read the docs, which is another big advantage of this podcast, you know. Okay. So coroutines.
Coroutines for sure. We didn't add so many new things recently, actually, but I'm a big fan of how we handle extension functions. I think it's one of the most successful features in the language. And the funny thing is that in the very first sketch we had on the whiteboard, the very first night of discussions about Kotlin, already had extension functions.
Yeah, and that's another feature that I think really is augmented by an IDE. I think extension functions, without that, you'd have to know where to go and find these things to import them. But this is sort of this thing that I just, in code completion, can discover from the whole project extension methods.
It's funny you mentioned that because I love extension functions and I use them all the time. But that was one of my issues with other languages, you know, like prototype-based languages, where you can open the source file for a class and you see no methods. And yet in your own code, you're calling dozens of methods on that class. And then you realize they're defined somewhere else, they're intercepted dynamically, whatever. So yeah, having the tools like help you is is really useful and fantastic, especially on large projects. Like when you have a large team of engineers working on the same code base, it can be difficult to find your way around.
Yeah, and this is where tooling support is crucial for Kotlin, and the static type system is crucial for tooling support. For tools to be smart, we have to have enough information about the program for the tool to be sure what's happening there. And I think we're doing a pretty good job there.
Yeah. I am still a little confused by reflection in Kotlin. You know, the special syntax for the, you know, the class .java and like
the K properties.
And sometimes I feel like I have to dip into the old reflection APIs to begin with, and then like the K stuff is on top of it. Can you say more about reflection?
Okay, let's try. So reflection Kotlin has, well, for a JVM side user, has two flavors. There is plain old Java reflection, which we can't alter in any way. So we generate some classes, and Java has access to these classes through reflection. That's it. So when you say class.java, this is not special syntax. It's just an extension function that turns Kotlin representation for a class into Java representation of a class. That's it. So this is just access, direct access to the Java translation of a Kotlin program. So this is not part of Kotlin per se. It's just an API available on this platform. So Kotlin has its own notion of reflection, which is, well, let's say we have compile time stuff related to reflection, which is not exactly a reflection. Like when you do a callable reference, like you reference a function with colon colon name, right? This is not exactly a reflective call because there is no dynamic resolution. It's everything is done at compile time and it's fast. But in any case, you are accessing an object by name as if it was not a function, but just a value, right? So the same thing you can do with classes, same thing you can do with properties. And this is like the basic reflection-like functionality that is available to all Kotlin programs on all platforms. And then some platforms make introspection available. Like on the Java platform that is highly dynamic and highly introspectable itself, we provide Kotlin APIs for introspecting classes, introspecting functions, so on and so forth. So there you have a full API implementation that gives you insight into everything in the structure of a Kotlin program. It's a pretty big library at the moment, so you need to attach a pretty heavy jar to your project, but you get the benefit of introspecting everything.
Well, it's nice that you did make it separate so that people who don't use it don't have to pay this price.
Yeah, yeah. So there is a very limited version of introspection that's required for delegated properties when we need to look into property name, for example. This is available without any heavy library on the side. So this is like the basic, let's say the minimal reflection that we ship on all platforms. The Kotlin for JavaScript or Kotlin Native don't have reflection implementations at the moment, and we are not going to make them available by default like it is for Java because it imposes quite a burden on the runtime. But we are considering opt-in reflection when you can basically say, I want to reflect on this class at runtime, or I want to reflect on this function at runtime. And then we generate the necessary information and make it available at runtime.
I see. So multi-platform, it sounds like with the whole IR, like that is a big strategic direction for you.
It is, totally is. Yeah.
What's your timeline for having that sort of, you know, well, let's just pick, like, let's start with Kotlin Native, because I think you've already shipped stable JavaScript,
JS?
Right? JavaScript and JVM, those are both done. Where are you with Kotlin Native at this point?
Well, they're done in different ways. So there are levels of stability for different components of Kotlin. The Kotlin JVM platform is fully stable, which means that we only make compatible changes or we go through a difficult deprecation process. Kotlin for JavaScript is released, but it's not fully stable because we are not maintaining this level of backwards compatibility. Kotlin Native is currently in the status of moving fast, which means that we do not promise any backwards compatibility, although we actually maintain some. So Kotlin Native is officially in beta, and this means that it's usable, but we are improving it in many ways. Like, this is, compared to the JVM side or JavaScript side, this is an area where there are very many open questions, and we have to experiment. We have to ship some solution, see how it's used by different people in their use cases, and then decide if it was a good solution or we really need an improvement. And
Because there are some I would say big limitations right now in Kotlin Native, like coroutines being single-threaded comes to mind. Right. The whole memory model issue that's not, I believe, decided yet, right?
Right. So it's actually these two are connected. So currently we use what we call a strict memory management model in Kotlin Native, which means that you're not allowed to share a mutable state between threads. Well, it doesn't even reason about threads at all. But in any case, you can't share mutable memory, which is important. Well, first of all, I would like the world to be written in this model. Like, no mutable state share between threads.
That would definitely make multi-threading a lot easier.
You know, the programming would be easier if all programs were just immutable. There was no way to change any values.
Well, I think this is a little bit of a harsh statement, but if we could at least not share any mutable values, that would be great.
So
the solution we have now does not allow sharing of mutable data. It allows sharing of immutable data. So you can create something, you can freeze it at runtime and then share. And there are some other primitives that help sharing memory. But in any case, this is an unfamiliar way of programming for many people coming from the Java background. So it's an open question whether it will work for many practical use cases. We're looking into this. And a kind of a byproduct of this is the some of the difficulties we are having with making coroutines work in a multi-threaded setting on Kotlin Native. We've recently made some progress in designing how it should work, and we really hope to very soon ship a version that does support multi-threaded coroutines on Kotlin Native. There is another challenge specifically on iOS, where the notion of thread is kind of deprecated, and there is a more rich notion of a sequential queue, which kind of means that you have the single thread semantics, but your PID actually changes like every suspension point. And I mean, for the user shouldn't care.
No, but that can be very interesting for the programmer, yes.
Yeah, it's like the end user doesn't care. Even the programmer might not care.
Or
shouldn't care, yeah. Yeah, but when we implement this, we really depend on like what physical thread we are on. And this just changes underneath our feet, and it can be
Hey, that's what you do with coroutines all the time.
Well, yes and no. Yeah, well, in any case, this is another challenge we'll have to address. But first, we'll ship something multi-thread and then address the queues. Yeah, so it's a very interesting story, and it will have many more iterations before we can just be sure that it's like stabilized enough.
So I'm interested in one thing about Kotlin Native. Like, what do you see the applications? Because, you know, naively, I haven't looked at it in a lot of details, but, you know, when I see some of those limitations, like not being in full control of the threading model, having to use immutable data between the threads, the first thought that comes to mind is, you know, writing the kind of like really high performance graphics code I'm used to, where, you know, like, yes, I'm using mutable data between threads, but that's how we go fast because we avoid copies and things like that. So I assume this is not the kind of use cases you're going after, right?
Well,
those are niche, to be fair, but
it's not the kind of use cases we focus on, I'd say.
Right.
So I think we should first address a more, let's say, more widely used widely present use cases. And our main focus now is to enable sharing business logic between Android and iOS. So there is not so often really high-performance code, especially graphics code.
Probably not really.
Bless you.
Sorry.
Probably not really a lot of multi-threaded code either, maybe.
Well, from what we see, people want to make HTTP requests and do parsing and processing on background threads, just not to block the UI.
I mean, it's more about being asynchronous, right? It goes back to the point of coroutines. It's not really that you care about being multi-threaded. It's more like you don't want to block your main thread. And
Well, from what I know about the real use cases, you want to be multi-threaded because you in your coroutine, you sometimes have some work like parsing a big JSON response from somewhere that you really don't want to do on the UI thread. So you want to offload that to another thread and then just use the results in the UI.
Right. But my point is more like, yeah, it's better when it's multi-threaded, obviously, but the application mostly care about, you know, doing having things come in later. So not blocking the UI, it happens that, yeah, making it multi-threaded is the best way.
Right, yeah. 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 So just coroutines in the main thread we already have there. So next question is how we offload work to other threads.
Yeah. So you mentioned freezing. So what is that mechanism exactly? Like, do you need to use special kinds of objects to wrap your own data? Like, how does it work?
No, it's actually much more straightforward. The runtime, so the capability of freezing objects is built into the Kotlin native runtime. So it basically, there is an operation that just flips a bit on an object and it never flips it back. So if something is frozen, it's frozen forever. And as soon as it's frozen, you can share it freely between threads and no races will happen.
Unless I write a bit of C++ code and I find that bit myself.
Oh, if you're nasty, you're going to, you know, shoot yourself in the foot in so many ways.
Yeah, with C++, you can take your own process down. It's not hard.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm looking forward to about 1.4, I hope it's in 1.4, is it called inline classes becoming stable? We started playing with this, and it's really solving some great use cases in the layout editor for us, right? Where we have a bunch of coordinates that we don't want to wrap as objects, all, you know, in painting code, you know, you have in X and Y.
Even in Android, like all those color ints, like all those annotations we have.
Exactly. And the thing is, we just like with the resource integers, you know, we want to make sure you don't accidentally confuse, you know, what is a scene coordinate from, you know, a screen coordinate and all these things. And so being able to, you know, what we did before was annotate them and try to have some, you know, some internal lint checks. But now we can basically make classes, inline classes out of them. And it's kind of amazing to create methods for these things. And, you know, you can override addition and all these other things. And it's just, it's pretty beautiful. So, you know, I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah, this is an interesting side effect of any kind of language feature you add on the type level. Somebody's going to override addition with this.
I just want to add for the record, we're actually implementing it as addition. This isn't one of those like, ooh, plus operator, let's make that be, you know, reverse list or some crazy operation. Right?
Also, I want to say that the Kotlin standard library does that already, right? There's a couple of...
okay, yes.
I'm not
yes,
super fond of all true. Those... But the coroutines do it a lot as well.
Yeah, so inline classes, I'm not promising to make them stable in 1.4, but we are getting some feedback and I'm very happy to hear that you're using it. And it's helping you. I think that there are many things to be improved about how we do inline classes.
To generate it code, for instance?
Yeah, in the generate code, so some things that are not optimally implemented at the moment are deliberately not optimally implemented because we wanted to be able to backtrack without breaking the code. And some things are just absent optimizations. We'll add them later. Yeah, so one interesting thing is that one other programming language called Java is looking into doing something called inline classes, which is not the same as what we have, but...
is that their what they used to call value types?
Yeah, it used to be value types. Okay. Yeah, now the term is inline classes, and it's not the same on many levels, and it is similar on many other levels.
Maybe you should call your something else like primitive classes or something.
There is. I mean, we have explored a pretty big namespace with this feature.
Okay.
And inline classes was such a great compromise. Like what Java had was different, and it was fine by us. But now it's the same again, and like we have to rethink the names. But yeah, names are not the biggest. Biggest issue here.
Well, this reminds me of the movie Office Space, you know, where the character Michael Bolton is upset and says the other guy should change his name. You know, I had this name first.
Yeah. Yeah, so one concern with our inline classes is that we really don't want to clash with the Java implementation, not only by name, but we want to be compatible in the future. So we'll wait for some more time, I guess, before that shapes out a little bit more. Yeah, we'll see. But I see a lot of value in this feature. So hopefully we'll make it stable as soon as we can.
Yeah, I also love that feature for many reasons, and we're going to be using it in Jetpack Compose. The only reason
but based
we're
on
not,
what Andre said, I think I should go and look at the bytecode again. I did play with some experiments, and it looked really good to me. But I wasn't aware of these other things you mentioned, so maybe I should go and see where this breaks down.
Have you seen the talk that Chet and I gave, where we showed the bytecode generated by inline classes?
I was there. Yes.
Uh huh. Apparently. So I have a question for Tor now. So you love inline classes, you love coroutines, there are a lot of things you love. Mm-hmm. Why would, feature request time, what would you like in Kotlin? Or what would you change in Kotlin?
Well, I think that Andre got
and
close
Andre,
to it when he mentioned
worse.
Companion objects. I still struggle. And the other day, I had to implement parcelable the old way, you know, not with a nice parcelize exception. And then you're supposed to put the creator field, you know, and you have to rename your companion object creator. And suddenly there's some non-creator stuff that is in the same companion object. And this felt really messy to me. And I do miss the static keyword. So, you know, maybe it's too late to go at it now, but it's one of those, that's one of those things where I'm like, I think that Kotlin is so much better in every way, but that is one thing that I'm like, I kind of miss that.
Yeah, so a big question or a big issue with the static keyword is that I think the more Java background a person has, the more they want static members in Kotlin. So this is largely the platform bias, and parcelable is a great example. Like if the platform weren't pushing you this way, you might not want...
You wouldn't care.
Yeah, you wouldn't care this much. So
yeah, and to be clear, I mean, I agree with that. It's more, I mean, companion objects are fine. It's more that they're often utility methods related to this that aren't per instance. So I want to be able to call them without having an instance. And, you know, I could put them on the companion object, but it just...
Make top-level functions.
Yeah, but then I have a polluted namespace. So I have this thing where I have two classes and they both have this inner thing, which are similar, like a builder. Like if you were to put your builder, you know,
yeah,
I mean, think of builder's a pretty good example, actually, what I'm talking about. Right? A builder should not be top level because then they're going to collide. And making them instance...
Don't use classes as namespaces, Tor.
Why not?
That's not what they're for. That's not what they're for.
Really? What's a better thing, packages or worse?
Actually, one of the tricks I like that I think coroutines have started using the idea of creating top-level functions that are named like the class, so they become your factory. They're not constructors; they look like constructors, but you know they're builders, they're factories. It's kind of a neat thing.
Yeah, you just have to make sure you name them uniquely because otherwise they're all in the same package.
Well, different parameters, different signatures. You're wrong, Tor. Stop it.
Was that an argument for overloading? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me return a favor. Actually, what would you like to see, Roman?
So it's very petty, but I'm still sad/mad about the bitwise operators.
Okay.
And it's a very small thing.
I knew you would say this.
So. Yeah, of course. But you know, I'm probably like one of a million people who care about
the
that.
Fact that I have to write and I can't use the ampersand.
Actually,
thing.
It's more like the SHL and SHR ones that bother me because they're hard to differentiate when you pile them on in your code. But that's very, very minor.
The thing is,
Andre's face is awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, the second that they allow you to override that as an operator, you know someone's going to, like, add streams handling for the shift operation.
Yeah, I don't want necessarily, like, you know, operator overloading on them. I just want the old style characters. Yeah. That's all.
So, sort of wrapping up here, what's next on the horizon for you?
Oh, lots of work. And we have KotlinConf coming pretty soon, so it's more work.
Tor, will you be there?
Well, I will be in the neighborhood. So I'm, you know, if I can get a, yeah.
You should definitely drop by the conference.
Yes.
We'll be happy to see
and
you there.
I think Chet and I have a talk, and Hadi keeps asking us to send him the abstract because we talk was accepted, but we need to figure out what the talk is about.
Yeah, so please be there. I'll be happy to see both of you and everybody else interested in the conference. So yeah, it's many things to do before. So we are not releasing 1.4 at KotlinConf. So managing expectations here. The release will be later, but still we'll be showing interesting things and discussing interesting things there. So it's a lot of things and topics to prepare.
I'm looking forward to it.
Same.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Andre.
Thank you very much. It was great.